So continuing our study in Genesis this evening, we are going to be looking at chapter 42, and hopefully cover 43, or at least part of it this evening. So in chapter 42, we're going to see Joseph's dream being fulfilled. The dream that he had that angered his brothers, that resulted in him being put in a pit and then sold into slavery, is going to be fulfilled in chapter 42. So we're going to start out by reading, as we usually do. And this first segment of verses is verses 1 through 5. It says, "When Jacob learned that there was grain for sale in Egypt, he said to his sons, 'Why do you look at one another?' And he said, 'Behold, I have heard that there is grain for sale in Egypt. Go down and buy grain for us there, that we may live and not die.'" Why would they die? Why do they need to go to Egypt to get grain?
Famine.
Okay. There's a famine going on. How long is this famine supposed to last?
7 years.
Okay. So 7 years. So if they've got to go get grain now because they're not going to be expected to grow anything anytime soon, or not enough to sustain them. All right. So verse 3. "So 10 of Joseph's brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Benjamin, Joseph's brother, with his brothers, for he feared that harm might happen to him. Thus the sons of Israel came to buy among the others who came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan." Sorry, I had saved where my points wouldn't pop up with every click, but apparently that didn't save, so you'll see everything all at once. So I was confused for a moment. So verse 1, we see Jacob sends his sons to Egypt to buy grain. We understand there's a famine going on. Sends them that they may, because Jacob says that we may live and not die. And in verse 4, he decides not to send Benjamin. Now Benjamin is, he's the youngest of Jacob's remaining sons. He is the son of the right hand, as his name entails. And Benjamin was also the son, the only remaining son, of Rachel, the wife he loved the most. So Benjamin has a special place. Literally, you could say the right hand of Jacob. And that's why Jacob does not want to send Benjamin. Also, when I think about reading this passage, maybe what he thinks about, he left Joseph with the brothers. What resulted from the last time that he had one, his favorite son amongst all of his brothers? You know, Joseph ends up, well, as far as Jacob knows, he was killed by a wild animal. So he doesn't want that to happen again. And so he thinks by keeping Benjamin at home, that hopefully he can avoid that. Okay, so at this point, we're going to read verses 6 through 11 in just a moment. So at this point, I just wanted us to understand that. So Jacob was 17 years old when he was sold into slavery. And he was 30 years old when he's made governor in Egypt. And so he's about to encounter his brothers when they go to Egypt. And he's going to be about 39 to 41 years old at this point. Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, typo. Thank you. Yeah, Joseph. We're talking about Joseph here. Thank you. So verse 6, looking at verses 6 through 11. "Now Joseph was governor over the land. He was the one who sold all the people of the land, or to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed themselves before him with their faces to the ground. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he treated them like strangers and spoke roughly to them. 'Where do you come from?' he said. They said, 'From the land of Canaan to buy food.' And Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams that he had dreamed of them. And he said to them, 'You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land.' They said to him, 'No, my lord, your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants have never been spies.'" So verses 7 through 8, Joseph recognizes his brothers. Seems like almost immediately he sees them and recognizes them. And they bow before him just like just like he had dreamed all those years ago. So it's been over 20 years since he's seen his brothers, yet he's still able to pick them out of a crowd when they come to see him to buy grain. But they don't recognize him. There could be many reasons for that. What are some reasons they wouldn't recognize Joseph? Yep. So he would have definitely been clean shaven, as was their custom. And with him being a wealthy member of the aristocracy, he definitely would have shaven.
He's also matured in that period of time.
Sure.
I know my brother looked a whole lot different at 17 than he did
yep.
when he was
30. Yep. So he may look different. Right.
They sold him into slavery, sure. But in their mind, he was long gone. And then also, it's a different place. I've stood 3 feet from my students in the middle of Walmart, and they haven't recognized me. Simply because it's not school.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different environment, completely. Now, you put a different environment, years removed, with the thought that he's someone else is dead.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and it seems that their inability to recognize him, Joseph kind of plays a game with them here as he interacts with them. Also, verse 9, so he remembers his dreams. So his dreams are being fulfilled here as the brothers are bowing before him just as he had dreamed all those years ago. And in verse 10, he accuses his brothers of being spies. He's probably having some fun with them here. But also, you keep in mind that the last time Joseph encountered his brothers was not a very positive experience. So he doesn't necessarily know what they could be up to, but probably he's just kind of having some fun here. And then also, by taking this approach with them that you must be spies, kind of gives him further cover for them not to figure out who he is. Sure. Yep, so they give, you're right, yep, you're right. In verse 10 and 11, they give a little bit of their background. And then verses 12 through 17, he said to them, "No, it is the nakedness of the land that you have come to see." And they said, "We, your servants, are 12 brothers, the son of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is no more." So who's the one that is no more? So they're talking to the one that is no more, and he's standing right in front of them. Verse 14, "But Joseph said to them, 'It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh you shall not go from this place, unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you, and let him bring your brother, while you remain confined, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you. Or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies.' And he put them all together in custody for 3 days." So one of the points I wanted to bring out was, so verse 13, they're standing before him and they're saying that one of our brothers is no more. So they're lying to Joseph. Obviously he knows he's lying because he's alive. So that makes him, that could cause him to think about, you know, they're saying that Benjamin still lives. But, you know, what could they be lying about that? So it seems here that Joseph wants to find out, is Benjamin well? Is he, or have they done to him what they did to Joseph? Yes, Doug.
I think it's important to say, you know, that one is not, one is dead. Well, that's the lie they tell him. That's the lie they told their dad. That's the lie they agreed to. That's their story that they're sticking to. They don't know if he's dead or not. They certainly had no idea that he would be the ruler, basically the ruler of Egypt. So they were not expecting to see him in this
capacity. Sure.
And as far as recognizing him, you know, people change.
Right. And yeah, good point.
Especially in the situation that they were in, they came to buy grain. It's interesting that they are brought to Joseph, and I know he's in charge of all of that and everything, but you would have thought that he would have put that off on somebody else, people come to buy, this is how much you can sell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very good points. Another thing I thought about mentioning is I was just doing some research about the appearance of ancient Egyptians. And I think during this time, you see a lot of like the wall drawings, and they'll be wearing makeup. So it was common for the men to wear, at this period of time, green makeup. So they wear green eyeliner. And he may have been wearing a headdress like this or a wig, because often the men might have shaved their head. So he would have looked very, very different. In addition to the makeup. Yep. Yep. He did. He's not speaking to them in Hebrew here. Exactly. So in the scripture will reveal that in a little bit later. That's a good point as well. So they were. They certainly wouldn't have expected him to be speaking Egyptian if they knew it was his brother. So he tells them in verse 16, in order for them to prove that they're not spies, that all of them but one are going to remain in prison. One of them can go back to the land of Canaan, retrieve the youngest brother, and come back so that they can prove that what they just told him about having a brother was true. And so, verse 17, all of them are placed in custody for 3 days. So, verses 18 through 23. On the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you will live, for I fear God." So immediately, verse 18, Joseph kind of gives them almost a hint about who he is. He says, "I fear God." And this is Elohim. This is the Hebrew name for God. So he's not talking about a Canaanite deity or an Egyptian deity. He's talking about the same God that they are familiar with. Verse 19, "If you are honest men, let one of your brothers remain confined where you are in custody, and let the rest go and carry grain for the famine of your households. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die." And they did so. Then they said to one another, "In truth, we are guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged us, and we did not listen. That is why this distress has come upon us." And Reuben answered them, "Did I not tell you not to sin against the boy? But you did not listen. So now there comes a reckoning for his blood." They did not know that Joseph understood them, for there was an interpreter between them. So as Linda pointed out, he's not speaking in Hebrew. Previously we're reading about their conversation back and forth, and Joseph accusing them of being spies. This is all being done through an interpreter. And so here they're speaking, and they're speaking out loud at this point. And so we're seeing just a minute that Joseph is listening to what they're saying. So verses 19 through 20, Joseph offers them a new deal. Initially he said, "All of you are going to be in prison. One of you can go back." Now, after they spent 3 days in confinement, he says here in verse 19 and 20, "Actually, only one of you will have to remain here with me, and the rest of you can take the grain back to your family. But you still have to bring the youngest brother back in order for the brother that's kept here to be released." And in verse 21, the brothers, they remember what they've done, what they did to Joseph. And so their experience they're having here, having been confined, being put in this situation with the governor of Egypt, where their lives are being threatened, it takes them back to what they did to Joseph. And in verse 21, it gives you a very vivid picture about what happened to Joseph when he was put into the pit or when he was sold into slavery. It says that we saw the distress of his soul when he begged us, and we did not listen. So you can think back to a 17-year-old boy being put into a pit And he would have been begging for them to let him out, not knowing what they were going to do to him. And then eventually they take him out and they sell him off to these Ishmaelites that are headed down to Egypt. And again, he would have been begging them, you know, don't do this, don't do this. Yet they didn't listen to him. And they sold him and they ended up where they're at now. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and we don't read about it a lot in Genesis, but as the Hebrew nation grows, and think about the book of Job, whenever a negative event would occur in someone's life, it was thought that it was a result of some type of sin. And oftentimes it could be. So the brothers here, you know, this bad thing has happened to us. We're being repaid back for what we did to Joseph. So Joseph, verse 22, he says, you know, I told you not to do it, which that doesn't do them any good at this point in time. He agreed to put him into the pit, so he was just as guilty as the rest of them, and didn't bother to tell Jacob the truth about what had happened to him. And then in verse 23, the point is that Joseph understands what they're saying and they don't realize it because he's using an interpreter. All right, so verses 24 through 28. Then he turned away from them and wept. And he returned to them and spoke to them. And he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. So verse 24, he turns away and he weeps. Why do you think Joseph turns away at this point to weep? Could be for multiple reasons. Just some thoughts. But yeah, that's why he turns away. He doesn't want them to see him weep. But why is he going to weep at this point? He seems to have been able to converse with them up to this point and have control of his emotions, kind of playing a game with them in some ways. Right. Remember the names of Joseph's sons. It was Ephraim and Manasseh. And what were the names? What did those names mean? Yeah, Ephraim, he'd forgotten. God had helped him to forget, or made him to forget about what had happened to him in the land of his father. So he's put all this bad stuff that's happened to him, all the lows that he's experienced in his life up to this point, he's put all that behind him. And now he's been in this position of power. He's got his own family now. Things have been going well for him for 8 to 9 years at this point, through the 7 years of good, and we're into the famine now. So this brings back a lot of negative memories, and it seems like just his emotions, he's just not able to control himself. So he turns away so they don't see him weep. Yeah, and that's a good point. So think about what they did to Joseph. I mean, he has a little phone with him, puts him into confinement for 3 days. But he's got a plan on what he's going to do to kind of unfold. He knows he's going to release them. Joseph is merciful, and Joseph has a good heart. And we're going to see that as we continue to read with his interactions with his brothers. Yes. Yeah, thanks. That is a good point to tie that in, even though it's a couple of chapters ahead. But Joseph understands his purpose. Yep.
Yeah, another thing, the wife's letter to Jacob,
Yeah, that's an angle I hadn't considered. So, I'm glad you brought that up because that does make a lot of sense. Verse 25. And Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain, and to replace every man's money in his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. This was done for them. Then they loaded their donkeys and their grain and departed. And as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money in the mouth of his sack. He said to his brothers, "My money has been put back. Here it is in the mouth of my sack." At this their hearts failed them, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, "What is this that God has done to us?" So, verse 25, it's kind of twofold. Joseph is doing two things here. He puts the money back in their bag. To me, kind of a little bit more of a playing games with them, playing some head games with them. But also, he's giving them their money back, kind of as, you know, in good spirit, not making them have to pay for the food. And he also, not just did he sell them grain and give them money back, he also gives them provisions for their journey. So he would give them water and some food to eat while they go back to the land of Canaan. And they stop somewhere and camp. And that's when one of the brothers in verse 27 notices that their money's been put back. And this, verse 28, they continue to have this guilt regarding, it seems like, regarding Joseph, or that these negative events continue to happen, and that now they say, "What is this that God has done to us?" They're blaming God, and they know that this money being put back, they're going to be accused, or likely going to be accused of theft at this point. All right, so verses 29 through 34. When they came to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, "The man, the lord of the land, spoke roughly to us and took us to be spies of the land. But we said to him, 'We are honest men. We have never been spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is this day with our father in the land of Canaan.' Then the man, the lord of the land, said to us, 'By this I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me, and take grain for the famine of your households, and go your way. Bring your youngest brother to me, then I shall know that you are not spies, but honest men, and I will deliver your brother to you, and you shall trade in the land.'" Now, before we continue talking about this segment, one thing I failed to mention in the previous group of scriptures is that before the brothers are released to return home, Joseph has Simeon bound in front of them. So it's kind of a reminder to them, he's going to be here and he's going to be bound and he's going to be in prison until you come back. To kind of give them some motivation. He's not going to be staying in, or at least doesn't appear that he's going to be staying as Joseph's house guest. He's going to be a prisoner. And so in order to save him, they're going to have to come back. So they return to Jacob, and they tell him everything that's happened to them. And they tell him that what had happened, that Joseph had interrogated them, accused them of being spies. And we're going to pick up here in verse 35. And they're continuing to tell Jacob what's happened. They've already concluded that. But as they emptied their sacks, behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. So they were afraid before when they were at the lodging place. Now they're showing Jacob, and Jacob probably would have had servants that might would have been around. And they empty out their bags that had grain in them and show them all the money that's been given back to them. And so everyone knows kind of what that means, that, you know, they're going to think that we stole this. And so that's why they're afraid in verse 35. Verse 36, and Jacob, their father, said to them, "You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and now you would take Benjamin. All this has come against me." Then Reuben said to his father, "Kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you." But he said, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is the only one left. If harm should happen to him on the journey that you are to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol." Or, in other words, he would die if something was to happen to Benjamin. So we have Simeon in prison here, and the brothers have told him, well, you know, to get him back, we've got to return, we've got to bring Benjamin. And Jacob, you know, in some ways is saying, Simeon's already gone. He's already dead. You're not taking Benjamin back with you because he can't bear it. So point here that's interesting. Jacob had showed favoritism to Joseph. And Jacob obviously still continues to show favoritism to Benjamin because he's willing to let Simeon remain in prison indefinitely just so that he doesn't have to risk there might be a possibility that Benjamin may not return. So he was willing to sacrifice Simeon if it meant keeping Benjamin safe. All right, so we're going to cover part of chapter 43. We'll see how far we get. So in chapter 43, the brothers are going to have to return to Egypt. Although we just read in chapter 42, in order for them to go back to Egypt and get food, they're going to have to bring Benjamin back with them. Joseph made that clear. So verses 1 through 7 in chapter 43. Now the famine was severe in the land. And when they had eaten the grain that they had brought from Egypt, their father said to them, "Go again, buy us a little food." But Judah said to him, "The man solemnly warned us, saying, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.' If you will send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you will not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.' Israel said, 'Why did you treat me so badly as to tell the man that you had another brother?' They replied, 'The man questioned us carefully about ourselves and our kindred, saying, "Is your father still alive? Do you have another brother?" What we told him was an answer to those questions. Could we in any way know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down?'" So we understand the famine continues. It's going to continue, you know, for 7 years. And when they had gone down, initially, it was the start of the famine, so probably end of year one, sometime in year two of the famine. So they've eaten up all the food that they had brought back from Egypt, and so it's time for them to return again and bring back some more food. So remember in chapter 42 that Jacob had made the decision that he was okay with leaving Simeon in prison in order to spare Benjamin. And so Jacob still tells him, "Nope, you got to go back. Go back and buy some more food because we're out." And this time it's Judah that speaks up. It was Reuben in the previous chapter, but this time it's Judah that speaks up and says, "We can't go back without Benjamin. And as a matter of fact, if you won't let us take Benjamin, we're not going to go back because the ruler of the land said that you won't see my face." And remember, Joseph is the one that sells the grain. He's, like Doug said, he's very hands-on in this operation, so they're not going to be able to get any food unless they do what he said. In verse 6, to me, Jacob is giving them a lesson. He says, "Why did you treat me so badly as to tell the man that you had another brother?" In verse 7, the brothers say, "We didn't have a choice. He asked us all these questions. He asked us, 'Is your father still alive? And do you have another brother?'" Now, at least what we read in Scripture in chapter 42, Joseph doesn't ask them any of those things, not in chapter 42. He accuses them of being spies, but they volunteer the information that they've got a father and another brother. So Jacob says, "You shouldn't have given any more information than what you had to." But the brothers here, to me, they're lying to Jacob here and saying, "Well, we didn't have a choice. We had to. We had to tell him everything because he asked us about our whole life story." Now, later, Joseph will ask him about their father, if he's still alive, but we don't read about that in chapter 42. And verses 8 through 10. Yes?
Verse 42, though.
Oh, this is supposed to be. Yeah. Yeah, that could be it. It could be that what we read about, and I've got chapter 42 in the slide, but chapter 42 we just read, it could be the account we read between Joseph and the brothers isn't the full conversation. It could be that Joseph did ask him about, is your father still alive? Although he asks them again, he's going to ask them in chapter 43 if their father's alive. So,
you would think he would be concerned about his father. It's because of his age and everything like that. And the second thing is, and he didn't know Benjamin's still alive. Benjamin may fall in the same territory that he did. And so he says, you know, he's my true brother. He's the only brother, but this is my true brother. And he wants to know about him. And Joe, why have you done with him? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in some ways it seems like they've matured somewhat because they're concerned. They're really concerned here for Jacob because they understand that if something was to happen to Benjamin, that he would probably, that Jacob's saying it will kill me. So they've got that concern for him. That's a good point too. There, they are in desperate times here. So in verses 8-10, Judah is going to take responsibility. He says, "Send the boy with me. We will rise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and you, and also our little ones. I will be a pledge of his safety. From my hand you shall require him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame forever. If we had not delayed, we would now have returned twice." So they had returned from Egypt the first time and had left Simeon in prison. And whatever, however much grain they brought back, you can imagine it would probably be quite a bit. They didn't go there so that they could last, you know, just a couple weeks and then have to make another trip. They would have bought enough food to last them for a significant amount of time, for months. And so Judah says, we could have already made the trip there and back and there and back again if we had gone back when we had initially returned.
And they were using it as food provisions as they were traveling back and forth, too, because that was one of the reasons they found them on chapter 42 in the first place. He had opened one of his bags of grain to feed his donkey.
Yep.
So, you know,
sure. Yep, and Jacob points out at the beginning of the chapter that they need to do it so that they don't die. So that, like Doug said, they're starving. You know, the food is just about out. So verses 11 through 14, Jacob's going to give in. Verse 11, then their father Israel said to them, "If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bags and carry a present down to the men, a little balm and a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds." So there's been a famine in the land, but they still have some meager food supplies that either they're able to still grow some nuts and almonds, or maybe these are dried and so they've got them. But they've got a little something. And so Jacob's saying here, take this to the man. So
it's not perishable stuff that can be kept, so it's
Yep. In addition to that, it's still like the nuts and almonds, so that's still some kind of a food store. So they're willing, they're going to offer this as a present to Joseph. So this would have been kind of a nice gift to give somebody some kind of like a snack food during the time of a famine is something really nice to give. Yes. That's a good point. Verse 12, and Doug, if you didn't hear what Doug said, that he said that these were all things that were natural resources in the Palestine region that wouldn't have been available in Egypt. So again, goes to the not only is it they're giving him like snacks and food, but they're giving him something that either he'd have to trade for or purchase, or would be more expensive for him to get in Egypt. So a very nice gift for royalty. Yep, and the myrrh trade was, I mean, we hear you talk about the spice trade or like the Silk Road. There was a path through the Middle East for trading myrrh. So we're going to stop right there, and we'll pick up from here on Sunday. Thank you. And also, if you're using a songbook this evening, you want to mark the invitation song. It's going to be number 301. Number 301 will be the invitation song.